Hello and welcome to A Changing Landscape, the GSC Grays podcast. This series of podcasts will address some of the most pressing challenges and exciting opportunities facing farmers and landowners today. From the loss of BPS and the overhaul of agricultural policy to growing your business, diversification and planning for the future. My name is Emma Smith, Rural Associate Director of GSC Grays, based in our Alnwick office in Northumberland. In today's podcast, we're talking about retirement and succession. Succession planning for a farming family can be an emotive and complex matter. There's no one-size-fits-all solution. Farms have often been the livelihood of members of the same family for several generations, and there are likely to be a wide range of issues that need to be discussed before a succession and retirement plan can be brought together and implemented. When embarking on succession and retirement planning, it's good to take advice from a whole team of professionals, including land agents, farm consultants, solicitors, accountants, and bank managers. This will ensure that everyone's on the same page and all aspects are covered. Today, I'm joined by a panel of rural professionals to give you an insight into the type of things you should be taking into account. David Gray is chairman of GSC Grays with over 30 years' experience in rural estate management. Alison Hall is partner of Ainkill and the law firm and head of their private client department. Finally, Stuart Alistair is partner with Greaves Western Eyre Chartered Accountants, advising agricultural clients and landed estates. 52% of respondents to our 2020 survey of farm businesses said they did not have a plan for retirement or succession. I suppose my first question is to Alison and Stuart. Is this a trend that you're seeing amongst your own clients?
I think the answer is yes, but I do think it's something people are talking about more than they were. And actually, when I saw that number, it wasn't as high as I thought it would be. And I think if you even asked this question 10 years ago, you would have got a lot more people had not thought about succession or retirement. So I think it's a growing trend that people are beginning to think about it more, but still not enough think about it early enough. And I think people are more open to having conversations now with their family and beginning to think about, well, I need, you know, to speak to the next generation about what's happening. But that is something that is evolving, because for a long time, you know, you could go back at least one generation and nobody would have spoken about it.
It's something that I think is not a natural conversation for farmers to have. Certainly historically it wasn't. I think you're right. I think it is something that is more in vogue at the moment. I think from our point of view, then, with regard to our annual kind of accounts and planning meetings that we have with clients anyway, you know, we'll touch on succession planning, and sometimes that's pretty obvious because there's a natural successor and actually we've got things set up, you know, with the joint discussions with lawyers, for example. You know, Alison, we've got a few that are set up with their wills and their partnership agreements and the various bits and pieces, so everything's in place already, and actually it's a very quick discussion, really. Just, is there any change? No, move on. And then you're more dealing with the what's going on the farm or the estate or whatever for the next 12 months and planning the income tax side rather than the capital taxes side. But I think for those that are not in that place, and it's not maybe quite as obvious from the point of view of non-farming kids, for example, you know, how are we treating them? What's the wishes of the current generation? How long do they want to go? All of these discussions are something that I think we have ongoing, but sometimes it's very short because they don't want to discuss further, and other times then you strike at the right time and effectively then start that conversation, and it's, as I say, it's not an easy one for them to have, so it we'll go from there.
I think if I can just add to that as well, what I'm noticing a lot is actually it's the younger generation that are beginning the conversation, because I think they are a lot more aware. And whether that's through talking to their friends or, you know, because of what they're learning at agricultural college, and they're beginning to see what the problems are. And things like social media, you know, you're a lot more aware of what's going on in the world and around you. So I think it's quite often the younger members of the family who are saying, well, what is going to happen? I don't want to be left with a problem when you're gone. And I think... whereas at one time, again, you know, the son would never have dared raise that with his dad, maybe. You know, now there is a lot more openness about saying, come on, we need to tackle this, which is good.
Alison, do you think that part of that is the fact that, you know, definitely over the last 10 to 15 years, with the need to, well, everything really moving online, that father has actually turned to, be it daughter or son, and said, you're going to have to get involved in this because I can't cope. I'm having to do the BPS online. I'm having to register cattle movements and other bits and pieces online. I've got yet another little red tractor inspection coming along the lines. And so whether dad likes it, dad or mum like it or not, they've brought that younger generation through. And that's actually meant that there is actually more communication, more discussion about the future, rather than the son or daughter being expected to go and milk the cows and then go and feed the sheep, or sit on a tractor harrowing the field, but they're not actually involved in the day-to-day management issues, which they've sort of been dragged into.
Yeah, I think that is a huge factor, because it's, as you say, it's the point where they have to have some help because technology is changing the way everybody does everything. And that's a useful way to, or an easy way for the next generation to get more involved and begin to see what the issues are. But I think also people are much more open with each other now. And, you know, farmers meeting at the mart talk to each other. They hear about the problem so-and-so had because dad died. There wasn't a will. Nothing got sorted. You know, so-and-so's going to lose the farm. And I think, again, there's a lot more openness between people in the same sector. So they're sharing problems. There's more willingness to do that.
And Stuart, how would you actually encourage clients to start that process and actually to get together and start those conversations?
As part of the routine discussion and you know, persistency, I suppose, when you're speaking to them about the general overview, the overlay of planning, then you know, have a discussion about that side of things. You know, making sure that, for example, then that there's a wee bit of a plan, not just for the next 12 months, but for the 5 years out, what happens if scenarios. Making sure then that they've at least got wills up to date that are in keeping with what their current wishes are. And if not, then signposting them to the lawyers, it really is their main thing with that side of things. And just really trying to look through the bigger picture. We're in a really strong position to do that because we don't just see what they're doing on the farm. We also see what's on their tax returns in terms of investments and various bits and pieces that are sitting in the background that perhaps have been forgotten about or not considered to be a tax issue or otherwise for an inheritance tax side of things, a succession tax point of view. But it also allows, you know, if they've got other things away from the farm, a discussion really in terms of where that goes in the future as well. So it's very much a case of keeping communication channels open. And we try not to just concentrate on the compliance side of the tax and the accounts, just simply because that allows these additional conversations to happen, which really helps the overall picture and hopefully the smooth succession of the business is really the main thing.
David, once we've got a farming family round the table, so to speak, what kind of things do they need to be considering as part of a succession plan?
Well, I think you've got sort of three different sort of sectors to consider. You've got the farming tenant, you've got the owner-occupier, and then you have, you know, in all our worlds, you've got the estate owner. And you know, the first thing, really before they start sitting around the kitchen table, it's really important there's just been a bit of sort of informal discussion, informal communication about aspirations, desires, needs, etc. Because the thing that will always worry what I call the senior generation is that what if? What if they need care? What if they need help? What if something happens to their partner? And it's very important the junior generation understand those concerns. And as mum and dad move into their, you know, 70s and 80s and into their 90s, if you're talking to them in their 60s, there's quite a long time to go. And it's absolutely vital that the younger generation don't push too hard. And there's a plan. And looking at the three different bits, you know, or groups, you've got the tenants. And what's absolutely about the key bit to the beginning is, you know, where are they on the tenancy agreement? And it's actually getting their ducks in a row in relation to the tenancy agreement and then having early communication with the landlord direct, if they communicate with the landlord or through the landlord's agent, as to exactly what the plan is. And one of the things that people have got to bear in mind now is that with farm business tenancies, there isn't that automatic right of succession. But on a lot of the larger estates, there's still a need for it to be farmed. And so whilst the farm business tenancy may have a cutoff date, to have early communication with the landlord or the landlord's agent is absolutely key. Your owner occupier and estate owner sit pretty close together. And they need to be just, as I say, considering, you know, exactly how the whole thing is going to be financed. You know, where are mum and dad going to live? What's going to happen if something happens to one of them and they need some care? Similarly, younger generation, they want to move into the farmhouse or the main house on the estate. They want to have plenty of space for their kids. They want to move out of the farm cottage and other bits and pieces. And so it is trying to manage that whole relationship. And I think it is the role of the key advisor, and the key advisor could easily be the stewards of this world, because they have that regular meeting on an annual basis going through to tax returns. It could be the lawyer, because the lawyer may well have been involved in various bits and pieces over buying the farm or taking on the tenancy, or it could be the agent. And I think all three of the professions have a key role of taking the lead position and then making sure that they communicate all the time with the lawyers and the accountants that are involved, so that there's a structured plan. What you can't have is the agent going in and talking to the client about this plan with really one eye shut, not really knowing the financial situation. And because otherwise you end up saying, right, you take them down the route that you think is right, only to find that a month later, the accountant said, well, that won't work, because you've got a farm partnership and you've got to do something about the other elements of the family. Stuart referred to them earlier, you know, the other siblings, the non-inheriting children, whatever you want to call them, and just how you're going to deal with them. Because I've seen a huge move over the last probably 10 to 15 years of moving away from, you know, eldest son or daughter inheriting farm because they're interested in the farm and the all focus will go down that route, to actually wanting to be fairer amongst all the children. And that brings a whole load of more challenges where you really do need the accountant to be involved, because he has that overview of what the financial position is. Would you agree with that, Stuart?
I do, and I think it's something then that those on this call will be aware of, in terms of from the point of view of a joint approach. You know, if something's quite complicated, it's not really just a case of us saying this is the way forward. It's very much a case of a joint approach between the land agents and the lawyers, and actually getting something that works for that client. And something then that is not necessarily just set in stone either, because it's got to be flexible to future developments. It might be that the current person that's involved in the farm goes away and one of the other siblings comes along. You can't have everything set in stone. You've got to have something that's quite fluid. And that's why I think it's not just do it once and then leave it for the next 20 years. It's very much a case of review it reasonably regularly, so that you know you're not in the wrong place going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I always say to clients, because they'll ask me, how often do I review my will? And I would tend to say, you know, at least every 5 years, or every birth, death, or marriage, or significant event in the family. And I suppose it's the same with any, because this is a business plan. Effectively, what we're trying to do is pull together a business plan for the whole family and for the succession. And I think the same time frame and triggers can apply. You can't leave it until there's a death in the family, but you would review whatever you've done when there's been a death in the family.
And I think the really controversial thing that sort of keeps coming up when you start raising the whole subject of succession and retirement is, well, what happens if Johnny or Lizzie divorce? And what's going to happen to the farm then? And I really need to hold on to it to prevent that happening. And I just try and encourage people to go down that route with your team, Alison, on the sort of prenup side and bits and pieces, because that helps. And that will provide a degree of security. But, you know, when you're sitting there with mum and dad and they're saying, oh, well, you know, not only do we have this concern about our future, but also what happens if they go off the rails? What happens here and what happens there? And I think one's got to put various levels of protection around it and try and get over to them. There is an importance to move on. If you don't move on and you just leave it, then the wheels start falling off.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, David. And it's, again, it's one of the biggest fears people have when I speak to them. It's always, what if my son or daughter divorces? There are, of course, other risks because, you know, you could have transferred assets to the next generation and one of them dies before you and you hadn't expected that. They could be declared bankrupt. Or actually, and not too uncommon, they could just simply say, I want out. I've decided this isn't for me. And I want to stop farming. I'm not going to stay on the family farm. But all of those risks can be minimized by making sure the arrangement that's in place is robust enough. And you've mentioned prenups. That's an obvious one for anybody who's got sort of next generation and you're thinking, well, I'm wanting to bring them in at some point. We always say, well, you know, talk to your son or daughter, will they get a prenup? It's the most unromantic conversation anyone will ever have. But actually, you find people in their 20s are a bit more matter of fact about these things than maybe older people like me. And they're a lot more relaxed about it and say, oh, yeah, it's just a contract. If it doesn't work, it's fine. It just brings it to an end. So there's less, I think, stigma around talking about prenups than there was. If a child has already married, they can do a postnup. So it's not the end of the world if the marriage has already taken place. They are not set in stone. So the longer the marriage, the less weight the prenup will hold. So if it's a short marriage, the court will give quite a lot of weight to a properly drafted prenup. But the longer the marriage and if there are kids involved, clearly the kids always come first. But it's really a useful tool to have in your toolbox.
But there's also an argument, Alison, going forward that the prenup, you know, you have the prenup and then, yes, you then talk about postnups along with the will, you know, particularly some of the on some of the estate clients that I have. The lawyers are very keen that we revisit, in inverted commas, the prenup, which has become a postnup.
Yeah.
And have a look at that alongside looking at the wills and other bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And also, you know, making sure that they're joined up. It's all very well saying that in the event of divorce, Johnny gets nothing, and everything sits with the daughter that's brought the farm to the marriage, and then in the will everything gets left to Johnny. It sort of will end up being unravelled by the courts, I suspect. Stuart, one question to you, in relation to planning for the future and this concern about what mum and dad do. How many of your clients do you actually see sort of sitting back in their sort of be at their 50s and turning around and saying, right, I'm now going to start putting this nest egg to one side. I'm going to start looking for my retirement house or my pension or whatever. Or do you find most of them just keep down that avenue of, right, we've got a bit of spare cash. We're going to go and buy a new Limmy Bull or something like that?
Depends on circumstances, and it really depends on individuals. I've been quite surprised, actually, even recently, some of the, as you're saying, the 50s, 50-year-olds, whereby actually they're thinking about putting stuff down a generation and doing a bit of planning, or in terms of the putting money aside side of things for their future. And that's something we encourage anyway, because as part of the sort of annual side of things is we're looking at, from a, first of all, an income tax-driven point of view, what scope have we got for pension contributions? And pension contributions then, you know, to take off, for example, 40% tax when farming's doing okay, is a good way at the moment to pre-budget to minimise your tax liability, but also has the added advantage, it's money that's away from the farm. It could push come back in and do something, you know, buy land or otherwise, but generally if it's staying off the farming radar, and that money can hopefully grow and possibly be something then that you would want to consider for non-farming siblings later. So, you know, if you can rip away some money over a longer period of time, whether it's actually into pensions or IFAs, for example, then it is an asset that can be left elsewhere away from the kind of core asset of the farm. So, yeah, we do see a bit of that in terms of putting money aside for their house. You know, quite often you find then that the putting money aside for the house is not really the major consideration at that point. But they'll maybe look to, for example, go for planning and try and get a house on the farm if they're needing an extra property to retire into. And that tends to be, we look at that from the point of view of not necessarily from money that's been in, put aside for investments, but perhaps maybe just current borrowing, just to try and make that as tax efficient as possible. And as we all know, farmers don't tend to retire. They might do a little less in later life, but they don't tend to retire and absolutely. Very few do. That's really the main look at it and the circumstances of the particular client.
So once we've got information from the family about who'll occupy what the long-term goals of the business are, what roles each member's got planning to do going forward, I guess the next stage is putting the plan into place. So transferring land to another family member might be one of those options. And Alison, I just wondered, is there particular timings that we need to consider as part of that?
There could be. I mean, we have touched on the risks that can be there if you've transferred assets to the next generation. But if somebody's willing to do it, the big things to think about, firstly, are will it trigger a tax charge to actually make the transfer? And, you know, we can come on to that. In terms of timings, then, if you're going to give assets away, you have to live 7 years at the moment. And we've got a budget coming up, so it potentially could change. But, as we sit here today, you've got to live 7 years for that asset to be outside of your estate for inheritance tax purposes. And fundamentally, you mustn't keep any benefit of the land you've given away. And that can often be quite a tricky problem, because unless you're giving the whole farm away and deciding you're going to move off, just to simply give part won't be effective unless you've given up any or reserved any benefit in that land. So 7 years is if you're doing it for inheritance tax purposes, it is the magic number at the moment.
When planning changes in farms, is there anything in particular that we need to consider in relation to inheritance tax? Thinking about farmhouse, who might be living there?
I mean, to claim agricultural property relief on the farmhouse, it has to be occupied by the person who is actively farming. Now, again, this is often something that people get confused about, because, you know, Stuart said farmers don't retire, and we've banged that into farmers for years, saying you mustn't retire, you must never retire. But that's about claiming agricultural property relief on the farmhouse. If they don't live in the farmhouse, it doesn't matter, because unless you're trying to claim agricultural property relief on their house, this is purely from an inheritance tax point of view, but it wouldn't matter whether or not they'd retired unless you were trying to claim relief on their house. But if you want agricultural property relief on the house that mum or dad are still living in, and we need to then show that they are still actively farming to claim that relief. You've then got, of course, all the tests that were set down by the Antrobus case of, you know, is it of a character appropriate? Is it, of a historical association with the farm? Would the educated rural layman say it was a farmhouse? All these tests that we've known about for years. And also, what's the value? Because is the market value full agricultural value? Or is there some non-agricultural value in the property?
I think there's also the farmhouse is one thing, but if we're talking about the comparison between inheriting and passing it down in lifetime, then at the moment, and again, this is something that may change in the budget, but at the minute, you've got the tax-free uplift to market value under inheritance tax. And if something's qualifying for APR, agricultural property relief, or business property relief, then we've got the possibility then that a case called the Balfour case comes into play into whether, for example, the let cottages, etc., are qualifying under the auspices of the business of farming and property. And therefore, potentially, as it stands at the moment, no inheritance tax is payable to get that down a generation, and there's a tax-free uplift to market value. Now, if you compare and contrast that with potentially gifting in lifetime, if something is qualifying for the 7 years for the gift, no immediate tax charge for inheritance tax by virtue of business oblique agricultural property relief, it's the bits away from the core agricultural assets that are the problem. So, for example, let cottages are a problem for capital gains tax to try and get them down a generation in lifetime by lifetime gifts. So what we tend to use then, and this is where very much a joint approach for planning comes in between the organisations, is things like discretionary trust, whereby we can hold the gains into trust. And then that might be, for example, from the, as David calls them, the senior generation, actually missing out the next generation for the purposes of income and going to the next again generation for the purposes of, for example, school fee planning. But perhaps with a view then that actually once the income is used by the very younger generation, the middle generation actually get the asset in due course. So there's bits and pieces of planning around that then that involves everybody really in terms of we need Red Book valuations for there, at the very least from your involvement, if not the planning structure side of things, but then very much the legal and the accountancy side of things to sort out. So I think really you have to compare and contrast what's more beneficial for that particular client circumstances as to whether they are at the moment better to hang on to it or try and pass down and mitigate, minimise tax as much as possible, whichever direction we're going.
And Stuart's right, because this is something that's key that we need to look at in the budget. Because at the moment, as Stuart said, you get the capital gains tax uplift on death. If you give in lifetime, you don't get that. So at the moment, there is a real risk you could end up with a double tax charge if somebody makes a gift and dies within 7 years. Because if they die within the 7 year period, the gift is still part of their estate for inheritance tax purposes. And they may or may not still get agricultural business property relief on that gift, if indeed the asset was eligible. But also the beneficiary has got it at the lower base cost, the original cost of the person who gave it away. So if they ever sell it, they're going to pay capital gains tax on all that gain. So you're effectively getting a double tax charge on the same asset. We at the moment do get that capital gains tax uplift, but there's been a lot of talk in the run-up to the budget that may be abolished on assets where you've claimed agricultural or business property relief. So there'll be no uplift on death. So we need to wait and see what happens. How that's going to work in practice, I mean, how will people know what historic base costs were for something they've inherited? It's going to be very interesting to see the detail and how it's meant to work. But a lot of work for the land agents providing hypothetical valuations when people eventually come to sell, I think. But the devil will be in the detail, but we'll have to wait and see.
And David, if we're talking about a move to the next generation, when's a good time to get that next generation involved?
Well, first of all, you've got to have engagement from the next generation. And there's also got to be the next generation there. And I think that's, you know, it depends entirely on individual circumstances. If you've got somebody who has, since they could walk, has been out lambing, feeding, has been very keen. Every time you turned your back, he was driving a tractor or she was driving a tractor. And they're completely immersed into agriculture and farming. The sooner you can do it, the better, as long as they get on. I think if, you know, one needs to be very careful that one isn't seen as a senior generation to be leading the junior generation and putting this great sort of millstone of expectation on their shoulders that they need to take on the farm, that, you know, it is what they really have to do. And if you don't have that successor as far as farming is concerned, but want to secure the farm for the future and the value that sits in the farm for, you know, a number of children, be it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 children, whatever it is, then there are a number of different ways that one can look at it. And you can, at the moment, with the legislation as it stands, you can go down a route of a farm business tenancy, just letting off the land and allowing someone else to do it, releasing the capital out of your farm to actually have a bit of a retirement or whatever. If you want to stay more in control, and I think at the moment with the various doubts that there are over the future, your contract farming agreement, your share farming agreement, your grazing license, and those sort of options depend on the particular circumstances of both the farm and the individual that you're advising. And whatever you end up doing does have implications from a tax point of view, both in respect of day-to-day tax, but also with regards to the capital taxes that both Alison and Stuart were talking about earlier. But I know that, you know, a lot of that subject has been addressed elsewhere in the Changing Landscapes campaign that we are pushing at the moment. But, you know, all those bits and pieces need to be taken into account.
And if you have got a next generation coming through, as well as having the practical experience, they also need to have that management and financial experience. Stuart, do you see younger generations getting more involved in the account side of the business?
Yeah, I think that happened really, particularly with Making Tax Digital a few, couple of 3 years ago when VAT, for example, had to go on online. So really in some of the businesses that needed to register for that, it wasn't a case of keeping the old cash book and that was fine for the older generation, for example, to be doing. And that was fine. Some of them have embraced the technology and that generation are still looking after the books and they're doing a good job. But equally, some went, this is a good opportunity to involve the younger generation. Therefore, I'm stepping back. Younger generation will keep the books. And therefore, we have been pulled in more into the management. Quite an awful lot more meetings now happen with both generations attending the accounts meetings, rather than, for example, just the older generation, because the younger generation are too busy because they're working outside. But one of the things that I comment quite a lot to people is, you know, most of the time you're working in the business. If you happen to take a half day to discuss things with me in terms of the accounts and the planning, then that's your half day out of 365 that you're actually working on the business and not in it. And that's that potentially gives us the direction and just makes them, challenges them to be thinking about where they're going, rather than an old Scottish phrase is I've been, meaning that they continue to do the same thing year in, year out. They actually think about what they're wanting to do and which direction really everybody wants to take the business.
I think we've covered some really interesting points to consider in relation to retirement and succession planning. So finally, I'd like to ask each of you what your top tip would be to anyone who's considering their options for the future. Alison, can we start with you?
My top tip is manage people's expectations. So that means talk to each other for a start, but it also means just find out what people are expecting for the future, because together we can pull a plan together, we can pull a structure together to make sure the farm is perhaps going to stay intact and go to the eldest child. But we worry about the other children, what do they want, what are they expecting? It's possible, perhaps unlikely, but possible, they're not expecting anything. And it's possible the eldest child is thinking, well, the minute mum and dad are gone, I'm going to sell the lot. But, you know, we don't know without having those conversations. So I always say, you know, let's get it all out in the open during lifetime, where we can all look each other in the eye, have a conversation with each other, and then we can manage those individual expectations and come up with a plan that addresses them. And it might be a compromise for everybody, but we're trying to address what everybody is expecting for the future.
Do it.
I've got two things actually. One is something that I'll speak to everybody about, which is don't give away anything that you think you might need for your own future, your own income for retirement, or your own care costs, because that's equally as dangerous. Tax is one thing, but if you've no money because you've gifted it all away, then that's a bit of a disaster for your own future. So that's definitely the starting point in any retirement planning. And it's completely contrary to what we've been talking about passing things down. But you've got to be careful you can afford to pass things down. And the second thing is really almost the reciprocal, to the extent that would you rather leave your estate to the family, or would you leave most of it to the tax man? Because if you're not planning properly, that's exactly what you're going to achieve. You're going to achieve the purpose of leaving most of it to the tax man. So whether you're passing stuff down in lifetime or just making sure that your will and the structure of the business, the partnership agreement, the do's and don'ts are in place for when you're no longer here, or indeed when you've passed it down the generation, but you still want some say in the matter, then partnership agreement's a good way of looking at it. But if you do nothing, the risk is then that the tax man will be the biggest beneficiary of your estate. And usually that has the effect of at least starting a conversation that points us in the right direction to start and formulate plans.
And I think I would echo one of the points that's been really covered by both Alison and Stuart, and that is communication. And it's not just communication within the family. For the vast proportion of the population, the most valuable asset that they have is their house. And in this particular world, the asset is sitting there as the farm, and it's worth a significant amount of money. It is important that one takes advice, and that one, and I know along with advice comes fees, and I know there is a general aversion to fees. But when one's looking at something of the sort of value that we're talking about, it is absolutely vital that one does take advice from the accountants, from the lawyers, and from the land agents. And it is joined up advice. It's important that communication, as I said right at the beginning, communication between the advisors, as well as communication within the family. And I think the final bit I'd say is that, you know, unfortunately, trying to be fair to everyone when one's talking about successors and the future is just about impossible. And in the majority of cases, if you do try and be fair, you wreck the business, you wreck the farm. So one does need to just stand back and communicate to everyone and manage their expectations.
And if I just add on there, David, I agree with you entirely on that, because I always say to people, fair is not equal. So fair could be very unequal, but it might still be fair to people. And also the final thing I was going to add is don't be put off thinking this is a mountain to climb, because you have to take it in stages. And I think that puts a lot of people off because they just feel this is a problem that's too big to tackle. And if you just start it, looking at it, you know, with any of your professional advisors, and just, as you say, start the conversation, then eventually we can together come up with a plan for people. But it won't happen overnight. It is an evolving process that takes some time, but it is tackleable. We can do it. It's just, you know, you mustn't get that sort of, oh, crikey, this will never get sorted. It's just too big a problem.
If you don't tackle it in lifetime, then actually you're leaving the next generation a heck of a lot bigger mountain, as you're calling it, to climb. And sometimes then they're remote from the detail, but actually the best person is the senior generation to actually get that across the line and make it happen, because they've got all the information and the direction in terms of what we need for that planning. So really, quite often, the bigger mess is actually when the next generation have to pick up the pieces because there isn't planning.
Well, I'd just like to say a huge thank you to Alison, Stuart and David for a really informative discussion about the important issues that need to be taken into account when embarking on retirement and succession planning. Throughout the rest of March, we'll be sharing further advice in relation to future options for farmers and their families. If you'd like to receive updates as part of our Changing Landscapes campaign, follow us on Facebook or Instagram, where we'll be sharing the latest content. You can also sign up to our mailing list by sending your details to changinglandscape@gscgrays.co.uk.